It's time for Type 40. We're a Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandise, and even the fandom itself. Doctor Who shaped the landscape of science fiction and fantasy for well over five decades, with a brand new season premiering right now on BBC One, BBC America, and other broadcasters the world over. It's time to step into our TARDIS and share our journey through Series 12 with a couple of diversions along the way here on Type 40. Hiya. Yeah, it's that time again. More Doctor Who talk to break up your week, tide you over until the next full adventure on a Sunday or whenever it is you're watching it. With me, Dan Hadley, your regular Type 40 pilot, Birmingham's King of the Geeks, and a lifelong Doctor Who fan. Just like you. Well, maybe not. It could be you're quite new to the series, and that's okay too. Type 40 is a show for companions of all ages, whenever and wherever you came in with the world's longest running fantasy adventure series. That's fine with us. There's no gatekeeping here. Just a little banter, trivia, and some lively, unfiltered reviews from friends and fellow fans. Speaking of which, here he is. It's been a while, but on this edition of the show, I'm joined... So excited, I can't talk. I'm joined by an oldish friend, and he's 133.333% of the pack who founded the Fandom Podcast Network, whenever that was, a millennia ago. But he's 100% undiluted and raw, Kyle Wagner. Welcome back, Kyle.
Well, I'm here, but all things considered, considering you guys are getting Meg exit right now, I think you're getting me, we're getting Harry and Meghan here in the States. I think you're losing the trade here. I don't know, but that's just kind of a feeling I've got here.
Yeah. Who are you going to send us back? Who's American royalty we can get back in return?
Well, I could always send you the orange thing.
Glossing over that, yes, it's the
first. another topics now.
2020. It's 2020, Carl.
It's 2020. We got a new season of Doctor Who. Yeah. Hopes were running that we would have some improvements, and we got some things to discuss, I guess.
we'll get to that in a minute. How have you been? What have you been up to? Did you have a good Christmas and New Year?
Yeah, holidays were good. Kept me busy. Got a little bit of the flu bug that apparently has been hitting across the globe and knocked me out for a week. I know you had a little bit of under the weather, and I know you had a little couple of family members who were hit with it that put them under the weather. But I hear everybody's on the ground, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, man down, man down.
Yeah. Been catching up on a little bit of fandom things. I watched The Expanse season 4, Lost in Space season 2, when it's on 1917 in the theaters, which I will say is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Obviously, the return of Doctor Who, getting through that, and just a lot of things in fandom. There's so much. Plus, trying to keep all you guys out of trouble, and bail money fund is running low. So I'm just saying.
Yes, sorry about that. It was midweek, and I should have known better, really. But yeah, I do appreciate it. I mean,
the Impossible Girl was giving hints that you had really done something. So I'm just
you haven't got to listen to everything Sarah says. She often it's to get herself out of a little hot water.
But Sarah's a little scary at times too. So I'll just say.
Only at times. But yeah, I can tell that you're really keen to hit the vortex again after all this time away. So we'll quickly disperse with all our essential fixed points that we like to hit for our companions and listeners out there as part of the Fandom Podcast Network. Each and every edition of this show, as you know only too well, Kyle, is from the past, the present, or the future, is easily found on the Fandom Podcast Network's master feed at fpnet.podbean.com and fpnet on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network's also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and new for 2020, iHeartRadio. We're delighted to be there. I'm delighted. Kyle, are you delighted?
No, I've been delighted. We're real happy to be part of the iHeartRadio family now, another great place to find all the great shows of the Fandom Podcast Network.
So if you are an iHeart person, welcome aboard. And whichever of those that you're listening to us on, you can let us know what you think via our social media presence, Instagram and Twitter, Type 40 Doctor Who, plus there's daily Doctor Who goodness with our wonderful companions in the buzzing Type 40 Facebook group, over 1,000 companions and growing by the week. We're blessed with a lot of great support across social media, and you'll be hearing some of their opinions a little later on too, but there's links to all of that in the show notes. Kyle, Now you're fit and well, and you didn't turn into a dreg yourself. Not permanently, anyway. Where can people best contact you across, I think they call them the socials in 2020? It's all changing so fast.
I have no idea, but you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW, no longer a White Walker, or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
There you go, simple of white. Yeah, they were a little familiar, weren't they? And I can be found all over the place. Not always in a good way, as Carl's just told you. Instagram and Twitter as The Space Book, where I talk about all things inside and outside of the TARDIS in movies, TV, comics, books, and with a lot of other fellow geeks into gaming, model making, cosplay. They bring so much to the table as well over in the Space Book Facebook group, so you can come and find us there and come and have a chat. And so that our timelines have finally converged, Kyle, I thought it was time that we had a chat and had a proper catch-up, because we're 3 weeks in to Series 12 of Doctor Who, and with everything that's been going on, and you've been ill and all the rest of it, I don't know. Have you missed Doctor Who while it's been away, I think is the first question I have to ask.
I got to clear up something real quick first, though, Dan, because you didn't bring it up. But it is a fixed point in time, too, because you got to have the right gear when you're going to podcast. As I am sporting the Type 40 shirt, and of course that means you got to go to tpublic.com and search Fandom Podcast Network, and you can find not only Type 40 gear, but all the gear from the shows at the Fandom Podcast Network. Just go to tpublic.com, search for the Fandom Podcast Network, and of course, you know, you can also leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. We love the input, because we always want to give you podcasts, as I like to say, to feed your ears.
This is it, though. If you have been missing the show, you can keep it close to your heart by wearing one of these shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if you're going to get me started about my anticipation for this season of The Doctor and what I've thought so far, we need to get those fixed points out of the way. there could be a little bit of a rant coming.
The brakes are coming off. Well, have you missed it while it's been away? Because a year is a long time.
You know, I've missed it, but it's been such a weird year because of how polarized the Doctor Who fandom got over this past year. And I want to say, it's probably not the right word, but the trepidation a lot of people felt going into this new season, fears of a repeat of last season, of the kind of very average feeling we got from this season. And we've had three episodes now. I know we're going to talk about Orphan 55 tonight, but we had the two-part Spyfall, and that really, those episodes instilled me with some hope. I mean, there was some new ideas. It felt like it had a little bit of fresh feeling to it, that they kind of the revision kind of caught on.
There was a spring in its step, wasn't there?
Yeah, it kind of had more of that Moffat, Russell T. Davies energy to it a little bit. I really felt like, too, in the second episode, it felt like maybe Jodie was starting to make a little bit of a turn. She kind of dialed down some of the just hecticness of it.
Wasn't quite so frantic, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't so frantic. She wasn't waving the Sonic around like it was a Harry Potter magic wand. It felt like she was kind of dialing it down. But I'm gonna say this now, Dan, because I came to a revelation while watching the actual first episode of Spyfall, and it kind of cemented itself with the second episode. You know, I'm willing to give Jodie some time. Some people, it takes them a little longer to find their voice for the Doctor.
You've always been very, very generous in your support for her. When she was cast, when we were counting down to Series 11, you were probably the most upbeat and the most positive about what was to come, weren't you?
And I mean, I've had some of my doubts now after seeing what was done, and I think it's a combination of everything. But you know, the Doctor is such a complicated character. I thought Piccoli didn't really find his version of the Doctor until his third season. I don't think he really hit his stride with it. So I was willing to give, I'm willing to usually give people two seasons for the Doctor, because it's just such a thing. But I realized something with Jodie watching this, and it's because here in the States, and I don't know if you guys had this over on your side of the pond, was on BBC America, they did a full marathon from Eccleston to now.
Oh, over Christmas and New Year, was it?
Over Christmas and New Year. It was like the last 2 weeks of December.
It's a little bit of a tradition they've got going on, isn't it? I've heard people talk about this.
Yeah. And so I was kind of down sick, so I got to watch a lot of, especially when I was sick, where they were hitting really the Matt Smith run. And it dawned on me watching Alex Kingston as River Song. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me what the problem is with Jodie as the Doctor. Her Doctor has no presence. Her Doctor does not carry any weight. And you see Alex Kingston as River Song, and everybody kind of considers her really kind of the first female Time Lord, quote unquote. She just had a presence, and her character always had a weight to it. When you knew when she was on the show, and she, there was just a weight to things she did and things she said. And Jodie, at this point with the Doctor, still doesn't feel like she has any weight to the Doctor.
Even when you know that River Song is around, she doesn't have to be in the scene, and you anticipate her presence, what she's going to do next, what she's going to say, when she reacts to whatever's gone on, when she's not around. She brings that in the way that, that the presence of a, of any of the Doctors has. And I say any of the previous 12. Well, you know I agree with you. I mean...
And I say that, but I also think that that's something they are trying to address, because I think, obviously, the revelations about Gallifrey and the Spyfall, second part, and a lot of the things bringing in the Master. And I actually liked her chemistry with Sacha Darwin a lot. And I thought Sacha Darwin was very interesting as the Master. I mean, I'm a big fan of his anyway. And I think, you know, coming off the immensely popular Missy and even John Sim as the Master prior, I thought he did a good job, and it was a very interesting dynamic. And I thought it's the kind of energy that Jodie hasn't been able to have anybody to play off of.
Yeah, they've worked together before as well, Sacha Dewan and Jodie Whittaker, in a British, I think it was a sort of espionage series called Wired about 10, 12 years ago on ITV. It was only a little mini-series thing, and there was two or three like good people. It was like an ensemble cast, and they were together in that. So they clearly know one another and have a working relationship. I think they're around the same age, which I think that should be the case with the Doctor and the Master.
Yeah, that was working for me a little bit more, and I think you could feel the chemistry between the two of them. Mm. And I you know, you're adding a little bit of weight now to the Doctor with this Gallifrey revelation and some other things. Yes, there's some, and we're going to address it even more in this episode when we talk about Orphan 55, but it looks like, you know, Chris Chibnall is kind of playing Footloose and Fancy Free with some of the timeline stuff and some of the things that have been...
Yeah, he's dicing with destruction in the hearts of Doctor Who fans by even going near this stuff. And not just classic fans like me.
Yeah.
You know, people who've come to it since 2005. This is the first 10 years mythology of new Doctor Who that's being sort of toyed with.
Yeah, and it's being toyed with in a way that I'm not. It could go very well if it's done right, but it could go disastrous. And I'm not willing. I know a lot of people are already starting to panic a little bit. I'm like, okay, let's see what they do with it. But yeah. He's walking that tightrope right now. But I mean, like I said, I thought Spyfall was very fun. I thought it had a good energy to it. There are still issues there. Do not get me wrong, but I really thought, especially in the second episode, it felt like maybe they were starting to find some footing a little bit. And after watching episode 3, I'm just going to say this. I wonder when Spyfall was filmed, if it was filmed before or after they filmed Orphan 55.
Funnily enough, yeah, before we get stuck into that, Orphan 55, the third episode, was shot by the director Lee Haven-Jones, who shot Spyfall Part 2. There was a gap. They were broken up, and I would imagine that this was also in Block B2, and that we're going to see it at a later date, at a later point, we will see episodes that were shot before both of them. I think there are further episodes that were shot in South Africa at the same time as Spyfall Part 1. So we'll get the balance of that, and we'll see how all of this sort of comes together. There are some fans out there who love stitching things together like that. You know, there aren't enough hours in the day, as far as I'm concerned, even in this thing. But yeah, you are right. And I think there was a little bit of an inconsistency with the Spyfall thing, but because it was broken up in such a way that one half was a caper and one half was a higher concept, as you said, Stephen Moffat-y kind of thing, that disguised any inconsistencies reasonably well. And they were both like running at an hour, but with Orphan 55 we've got a standard. This is our first standard episode of Doctor Who since when was it, late November 2018. So yeah, Orphan 55 premiered on the 12th of January 2020, following a bit of a mixed reception from the two-part opener and a little bit of a drop in audience. But this had, as I said, a returning director, returning writer, and I think we were all hoping that it was going to serve us some satisfying Doctor Who fear. This is a synopsis, just in case you it's been a few days. You might not remember all of it. I can't remember all of it. After Graham wins the Team TARDIS a free holiday at the high-end exotic alien resort of Tranquility Spa, it becomes clear that not everything is as it first appears. Why is the staff so worried about oxygen levels in a location that appears perfectly hospitable to humans? What are the monsters stalking the corridors? And why does the planet on which they're all standing bear the ominous name of Orphan 55? This is Ed Heim's second script for Doctor Who following last series. It Takes You Away. That was the last standard episode, come to think of it. Himes was the first writer that we knew was going to be involved in Series 12 after he kind of boasted about it on social media well over a year ago. And yeah, there have been criticisms already of all the stories in this run for some of the same things, really, all being a little bit derivative and pulling on other stories, not just in what you were talking about, in trying to tap into more successful eras, the Russell T. Davies and the Stephen Moffat era, borrowing story strands from other stories entirely. Is this something that you picked up on at all, Kyle?
I picked up on it a little bit. And, you know, I actually think that's more of because of some of the BBC's edicts on Chris Chibnall over the past year and wanting to get back to more of that feel of the Moffat and Russell T. Davies era. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where some of this is coming from. But first and foremost, can I just say, I hope this is Ed Heim's last ever episode of Doctor Who. Last time should have been his last episode, because let's not forget, Ed Heim is responsible for Who Frog.
Yeah, let's get right to that, because we were both here on the podcast talking about It Takes You Away at the time, Ed mm-hmm. Heim's last script. Now, there are people out there that liked it. I'm well aware of that. But if you remember, Kyle, you and I were here talking about that one. And when this episode started, I thought it felt quite fun. There were some fun scenes on the TARDIS. I thought it felt lighter again, and that it was going to be considerably better than It Takes You Away. But in the end, it did it again. I said to you on that show, whenever it was, over a year ago, that all these decades watching this program, you know, through thick and thin, through its various rises and falls in fortunes, that I had never once laughed at this show ever until It Takes You Away and that whole frog scene. But Ed Heim managed to do it again. And I laughed out loud watching this episode. And we'll come to why later on. So it's two for two for Ed. And yeah, I don't want him anywhere near this show again. The episode was, I mean, in some respects, it looked quite good. It was filmed in Tenerife. You know, the location was quite sun-kissed and a little futuristic. Quite nice with our regular cast. Jodie Whittaker, Mandip Gill, Tosin Cole and Bradley Walsh. And it featured guest actors Cole Farrell as Benny, with Julia Fogel as Vilma, Laura Fraser as Kane, Gia Ray as Bella, James Buckley as Nevi, and Lewin Lloyd as Silas. So there's quite a big cast to this, and there's a lot going on. We've got the exotic location, we've got the monsters, we've got the, how can I put this, the sense of the uncanny they were trying to pull into this, and that I think they were trying to, as you said, a deliberate attempt to chime with classic Doctor Who storytelling. But in the end, for me, and I don't know, maybe I've just watched too much Doctor Who, but I just saw too much. It was incredibly derivative. Other televised stories, classic and new. I made a little note. We got, and this is for you companions out there who may be ticking them off, we've got Full Circle, The Mutants, The Happiness Patrol, Paradise Towers, Pyramids of Mars, New Earth, The End of the World, Love of Monsters, The Curse of Fenric. The list goes on and on and on. Even last series, their own Ghost Monument. There was a whole scene that was almost exactly like that. But the most of all was a story called The Mysterious Planet, which is part of the Trial of a Time Lord season for those who are big on the 80s stuff. And there was a whole revelation in that story, almost beat for beat, that was repeated in Orphan 55. The idea that this planet they're on was Earth and it had been shifted across space. You know, they even found the clue to that of exactly the same means. It was all lifted directly from that, to the point where I felt that every other line, that there was very little original in here, story-wise. I mean, I understand that some people were excited by it. And maybe if you haven't seen any of that, then it's not going to have any effect. And like I say, maybe I have seen too much Doctor Who, but you know, I listen to Big Finish. They put out three or four Doctor Who's a month, and I never feel that way about their output.
Well, okay, so let me address something with Ed Heim real quick, because I feel this way about this episode and It Takes You Away. They both started off with very interesting concepts.
Yeah.
They both started off with, ooh, this is, I'm intrigued. What are they doing? But by the end of the episode, they've gone so far off the rails that you don't, you're like, what left turn? Where did this left turn happen that we are in this place? Because with this episode, it starts off like you said, it's going to feel like one of those fun standalone episodes of Doctor Who. Yeah, it might have some classic Who tropes in it, but you know what? After having the two-part season premiere, this is kind of what you expect. You kind of expect to maybe have this episode that kind of plays back on some classic Who tropes and things like that. And this one was loaded with them, without a doubt. But there also was some interesting ideas. One of the things I really liked in it was the Hopper virus.
Yes, me too.
Was like, why couldn't they have kept the focus on this instead of bringing in this whole aspect of the fact that they're on this other Earth? Or so if they would have just done something with like the Hopper virus and it becoming something bigger and nastier than what it was and causing all these problems and the virus turning the resort against them. I would have loved that. That would have been a great thing. But and it started off fun like that, and then it just made this turn to where, and it fell on something that we had a complaint with Doctor Who last season. And, you know, I understand Doctor Who is always kind of in its own overt way talked about things going on to society. But with the Chibnall run, we came back to, okay, we're going to hit you over the head with this sledgehammer about this topic in society today. Obviously, this one being about how we're treating the planet, what's going on, things like that. And at the end, you have the Doctor give this speech that feels like she's not talking to people on the TARDIS. She's talking right to the audience. She's breaking the fourth wall.
It was very much like that. And, you know, and I won't claim to be the first to say this. The amount of people out there who are comparing it to those little speeches that He-Man used to give at the end of Masters of the Universe. Direct to camera. This is the moral of this one, kids. Listen hard. Make notes. And is anybody chewing at the back? That kind of thing. It did feel like you were being... It felt like you were being lectured.
I've got no
other word. I know it's a cliche. It felt like you're being lectured. And, I mean, there was a lot of rhetoric in this entire thing. It sort of gradually, as you've said, it started out quite fun. And there was a dash of Douglas Adams, like, you know, with the virus and things like that. Mm-hmm. Fun ideas. And that's why at first I thought this might be quite good and quite bouncy. That's my word of the month, bouncy. I think I've said it on all three shows. But yeah, I thought it was going to be like that. And then, like you say, it made this sort of handbrake turn hard into this sort of environmental sermon. I mean, we've got the fingers pointed at the Russians halfway through this. It went right the way through. It's all so half-baked. And
yeah, I mean,
I'm sure there are people out there, Kyle, who will be clapping like seals and nodding to one another, you know, because maybe their politics completely aligns with all of this, and that's all they need. But I do feel that Chris Chibnall, and certainly Ed Heim, it's Chris Chibnall running the show, that he should know. I think he's forgetting who this series is aimed at, who it's talking to. And to make the excuse that it's for the next generation, it's for the children out there. No. Don't give me that. The children are the most discerning audience of all, and this talks down to everybody, including the children. And in my experience, both as a parent and as a creative, you talk down to children, and that's the one thing you're guaranteed to lose them.
Yeah, no, and one of the things too is, again, I come back to the aspect of this episode started off with so many interesting concepts. You have, like I said, I love the whole concept of the Hopper virus. I also love the fact that you've got the three companions being the ones to try to lift the Doctor's spirits. And it's something they introduced in the Spyfall episode was the fact that these companions don't know the Doctor, and now they're asking questions. And they're not necessarily questions the Doctor is ready to answer yet. We've got the Doctor dealing with these ramifications of everything she learned from the Master the prior episode. It's obviously still weighing very heavily on the Doctor. I'm like, between the Hopper virus and that, you could have done a full episode with that. And still had things going, but instead, it's what it is.
There's a lot in there, isn't that? It's overburdened.
And you just hit it. They overloaded the episode.
It doesn't have to have a message, does it?
Yeah, but you can still have a message, but it doesn't have to be this sledgehammer effect. And that's my point with this. Yes, this was very much a very trope episode of Doctor Who, and that, I'm fine with that. You're always going to have those episodes every season, especially after a big event episode or something major happens. That's fine. I'm good with that. But it started off with so much potential, and that's the frustrating part. And I think when I look back on it, that's one of the very frustrating parts about a lot of the, I would say at least 70% of the episodes we've gotten so far from this current creative team of Doctor Who, is they all start off with some great potential and some really interesting ideas.
Yeah, that's fair.
And how they execute them by the end of the episode, you're like, what were they thinking in the writer's room? What were they thinking, you know? And the other thing that I've noticed of this is, and I don't know if this is, we're starting to maybe see some of the acting limitations of some of our companions. Ryan and Yaz feel completely flat so far this season.
Yeah, this is, we've been promised a fair amount. We were promised that this episode, the Orphan 55 itself, was going to feature the scariest villains in Doctor Who history.
Now, I will say this, great design. It was a great design.
From the neck up, they look fantastic.
Yes,
and you know, to obviously we're there for the monsters. We're Doctor Who fans. We're up to the point. We are there for the monsters. As I said, we're used to hyperbole as Doctor Who fans. I can sort of see through that. I take it with a pinch of salt. But there are people out there, again, including kids, who latch onto that and they think, oh, you know, I'm going to see whatever. This is amazing. But of course, they didn't mean scary like that. They meant scary in a political way. So that's gonna annoy people as well. But they also promised us. This was pretty soon after Resolution aired. They promised us that these companions were going to be given much more time. There's going to be more TLC, and that specifically Mandip Gill's character, Yaz, was going to get her own arc. Now, pretty soon, we're nearly a third of the way through this season already.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. We're on another 10-episode season. We're already into episode 3, and there's been very little character development here, except with the Doctor, who truthfully probably needs more character developed than anybody. But this, it goes back to what I think is, it's an overcrowded TARDIS. They can't commit enough to each person in this. We're just lucky that the aspect that Graham is such a great character, and the actor portrays him so well, that that's the one character they don't really need to expand on, because his presence alone just stands out no matter what the episode is.
Exactly. And the thing is, there are people out there in the press who say, oh, you know, they're writing all the best stuff for the man, and it's not fair. You know, certain very sort of that kind of journalist who's all over these issues. The truth is, Bradley Walsh's material is no better than anybody else's, but because he's a consummate professional and that he's in the right role, he can turn pretty much any morsel that they throw his way into gold. You know, there was a lot of good stuff with him at the start of the episode. As it went on, I have no idea what he did, but at least we knew he was there because he was doing a bit of business. Even if he wasn't in the foreground of the camera, he was doing something behind. He's practically carrying this show. Mandip Gill, I hate to say this because I do like her. I would love to see her do something. You know, the highlights of her appearances in Doctor Who so far have been shedding a couple of tears a few episodes ago. But yet again here, Kyle, I don't remember a single thing that character said or did in Orphan 55. Not a blip.
Yeah, and the whole, and with Ryan, and again, I like the actor, and he's shown some capabilities in season. He was actually the character coming out of the season premiere last year I was most excited about, because I thought, but the whole episode was,
he was good in this. I thought, yeah. I wanted to come to that. Tosin Cole was good in this. He was very believable and very warm when he was flirting with the daughter character. I can't remember her name. That was believable.
And he had the great line of, if this is just a test, why is he running with a gun?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so
he was thinking.
He gets some good moments, but I don't know if it's Tosin or what. But everything just feels so deadpan. There's just not a lot of emotion being.
There's no real genuine bond between the characters. I think there is between the actors, and I'm sure they. I've no doubt they're all lovely and they love working together. But these scripts are not. They're not helping them knit these characters together. There was a bit of character building in Spyfall Part 2 when they were hiding out on that building site, construction site, but of course the. those three companions were pretty much benched in that episode to get them out of the way while the Doctor was running around with other people, with quasi-companions. I don't know why that was. I think with a bit of engineering, that could have all worked so much better. Jodie Whittaker, obviously the programme and Jodie Whittaker's Doctor were away for an entire year. Like you, I was expecting not for her to have a rethink, but for some evolution of the character and the performance to come from Jodie this time out.
Let me ask you something, because this is actually something I had when I made note of it when I watched this episode, though.
Yeah.
Because I did see some more good things from Jodie in the aspect she is... It's another episode where she has dialed down this crazy frenetic thing. She wasn't, again, she wasn't whipping around the Sonic like it was a magic wand in this episode.
Now, but all I can remember is of her arms flailing around and her running from place to place to place and telling us... Rather than leaving it to the director, well, to the script firstly, and then to the director, and then to the ensemble, the cast all around her, to infuse the story and the piece with that sense of danger, rather than leaving it all to work, that character was left to tell us that we're in danger, to tell us that the stakes were high, rather than let us feel it for ourselves.
But actually, and I
so
kind of like how they... Yes and no, because I kind of liked how they established it, because... To me, one of the big things was she was kind of piecing together the mystery while they were holding out information of it. And it was something to me that the doc would do when they're on that van traveling to that area. And she's just piecing it out by reading their facial expressions or kind of little movements they're having. So I was like, that's very much something the doctor would do.
Oh, like the Hercule Poirot kind of routine.
Yeah. I thought that part was very well done. And I think, again, we're starting to see a few signs of maybe Jodie's starting to find her way a little bit with the doctor. I'm not saying it's there. I'm not even saying it's there. But they seem to be finding a little bit more. At least Jodie is. I don't know if this is from direction or if just is Jodie just doing it herself, saying, you know what, I'm going to make some changes. But she does seem to be finding a little bit more in the balance within her doctor.
Jodie is doing her best. This is the very best that she can bring. I've no doubt about that. She's nowhere near enough for me. I can't stand it. The reason why all of that was going on, and you're absolutely right, Jodie was doing that, the character was doing that, and I think the reason why it didn't chime with me at all is because it was all so implausible. Again, you know, she was telling us, she was stitching it together, but with those things like the Agatha Christie style stories or movies or Columbo and things like that. Okay, slightly different in Columbo because we know what's going on before he does. But the joy is in seeing the character stitched all together like that. It all seems so implausible and so sketchy to tell us about this through little lines of dialogue. I'm not the kind of viewer who will try and anticipate and would want to sort of have it all worked out before the script tells us. But I think when a story does that... And we feel, ideally, the weight of the situation, our jaws should drop, that these characters we've spent half an hour with, they're in mortal danger, that they could be related to one another. Our jaws should drop at that. And I barely flickered. You know, maybe, but by that point, they'd probably lost me. I don't know. I'm not sure.
But the point I'm going to make here, Dan, and I still believe this isn't necessarily me defending Jodie, because I think she's doing the best she can with the material she's got.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
But I do think you can't put all of this on Jodie. I think
not at all.
I said, we talked about it earlier. The writing. I mean, the fact that this episode just takes this weird left turn and does the things that she does, and then asks her to give this speech. Yeah. You know, I know it was something. I'm going to talk about something that was posted in the Type 40 forum by somebody who said was having a problem with the whole upgrade line from Spyfall, and I kind of even groaned over that line. And this person talked about, well, Jodie could have refused to say that line. Yes and no. She's paid to perform based off of the script. Yeah, she could have made a big scene. I don't prefer these lines or whatever like that. But there gets to a point where you've got to pick your battles with that.
Of course, and they work quite intensely and very closely over a long period of time. And she's got to have, any of the cast have got to have some faith and trust in the material that they're given.
Yeah, and you know, I want to talk about the upgrade thing just real quick here, if you'll indulge me.
Yeah, of course.
I know where a lot of people were taking it with, oh, she's upgraded because she's if the doctor's a female now. I didn't take that way. And yes, my eyes rolled, but I took it as the fact it's the doctor ego. It's the doctor, then. Whatever incarnation of the doctor always thinks he's better than the previous the Doctor, the current incarnation, was always better than the previous incarnation of the Doctor.
That's a very generous reading of it.
But I think because of where we're at in society today and because of the things that have happened, people just took it there. And I think if it would have been somebody else saying it, or even 10 years ago and it was said, people would have took it, oh, that's the Doctor being the egotistical, you know, look whenever we have
that is true.
Look whenever we have multiple Doctors together, they're all kind of ragging on each other. They all kind of take shots at each other. So yeah, I think that's an angle I think a lot of people maybe forgot to look at with that line. That's all I'm saying. I get where people are coming from and their feeling about it, but I think there's another way to look at it. And I think that's a problem that we're all having right now, because we're so influenced by society around us and what society is telling us, that we kind of forget certain things within, and it's not just a Doctor Who thing, it's across the board.
Yeah, you're right. It's not in isolation, and it is this particular writer who slapped us around the face with this stuff time after time after time after time. So I think if it had have been a one-off thing, a great many of us would have laughed it off. I would have. You know, people may think that's unlikely, but, you know, I believe the things that I say on this show, and I would have done. It is a moment that definitely... Well, it immediately pushed me outside of that particular story. And in this instance, you know, we had to wait until almost the end. I found the whole thing, for such a noisy piece of TV with so much going on, so much being said, and so much action, I found
it was dull.
Slow.
It was dull.
Yeah.
It was dull. It was dull because...
Cheap looking?
I'm not going to say fully cheap looking, but it was dull because... We've been there, done that. And it makes me think and realize that maybe the best thing that could happen to Doctor Who is after this season, if all the things are still going on, if they decide to make a change, maybe it is time for the Doctor to have a couple year break to get things really refreshed, to give people time to actually miss the Doctor. And I think if you're going to do that, if you're going to have a massive change where, you know, Jodie goes, Chris Chibnall goes and stuff like that, give us a couple of years. Give us some time to really kind of like get excited about the concept. Okay, a fresh new Doctor Who is coming after what we just experienced. If we have a change and it's 6 months, 8 months later, I don't think that may be enough time. I think this is a time where, guess what? We might need a longer regeneration period. I don't know. I mean, that's just kind of how I feel, because we've had the same feel from the Moffat and Russell T. Davies years for so long. And then we got so shaken by this change from Chibnall. I think maybe that, you know, that's something. I know there's a lot of rumors. The Chris Marshall rumors are floating out there big time again, and a lot of other things. So it's just,
do you think the series itself is just starting to look and feel really, really tired somehow?
I think it is. I think it honestly is a little bit. I think it even felt a little bit that way at the end of the Moffat run, because I think Moffat was kind of burned out himself.
Because we're less than 2 years since this radical reinvention, this big relaunch, aren't we? That, you know, excited pretty much all of us, even I was excited.
We were all excited for it. We were all excited for the possibilities, looking at a different creator with a little bit of different style and everything like that. But I think the problem was that we got, like with a lot of things, the style of Moffat and Russell T. Davies, we kind of became our comfort chair. That chair we just sit in and we just get in it and it's just comfortable. We've got our spot in it and we got everything turned upside down. They brought in a new chair, it had a stiff back or was a little lumpy and we can't get it comfortable yet and it hasn't been broken in properly yet. And the problem is I think we're at this point where we're looking at least this version of this chair is something that's like, you know what, we might just need to return this to the store and get something else.
I think Chris Chibnall is trying to get us back to that cozy place, but because he's doing it, he's not doing it with something that comes from him naturally. He's trying to channel other people. It's one thing to try and channel other eras of the show with the lore. You know, I'm a little cynical about that, but I at least do understand it. And a lot of fans have been asking for it. So it would be, again, would be mean-spirited to deny them that. But when he starts trying to sort of speak with another writer's voice, Stephen Moffat could do that up to a point. Chris Chibnall is not gifted enough to do that, and this show and its reputation and the sort of brand loyalty and prestige that it's had built up over 15 years, it's gradually ebbing away. But I mean, you've got two performers, Laura Fraser. This is a woman she played Kane in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
She looked like she was just there for a casual afternoon, walking, breezing around.
Everybody who was there looked like they were just there for, okay, I'm getting a paycheck. That's true. That's truthfully what it was. And you brought up a point a little bit ago, Dan, that I think I find very interesting. If you watch interviews where Jody is there with the three companions and they're just, it's just an interview where they can just be themselves, everything like that. They're fun. They are a ton of fun. Jody's great. The three of them are great. You can see the chemistry between them.
Yeah.
And then you see them get up there with these scripts and Chibnall running things and everything like that. And it's like that energy is being sucked out of them.
Beautifully put. Because they've been burdened with this too. But because they've not been on the show before, you know, a great deal of them, Jodie Whittaker had never really seen the show before. She'd got a couple of mates who'd played the part, but she'd never really seen the show before. Only Bradley Walsh was particularly aware of Doctor Who, properly aware. So they've been told that this is what the series is about, particularly Jodie. She's been told what this character represents. And you know, Chris Chibnall's responsible. He's not... he's responsible for casting her. In my opinion, she's been miscast, however way you look at it. But he's also informing her of what makes this character tick, rather than saying... I'm not saying they should have sent her away with a truckload of DVDs, but the real Doctor is inside that actress somewhere, but she's now so distant from it because of this huge burden that they've sold them all, and as you said, that is sucking the life out of the character, that naturalistic quality that any actor brings to it. And that when even stories and scripts like this, you know, Smile was a very average story, and Peter Capaldi, because he was a consummate actor, there was a guy who could polish the you-know-what. He made that, if not unmissable, he certainly made it fun to watch, was able to lift it somehow because he does understand the character, and partly because of his history with it, but because he's working so closely with a showrunner who also understands the character. And all of it's been overburdened. They're bringing in these, as I mentioned, Laura Fraser, Vanilla Sky, Breaking Bad, all this stuff that she's done. James Buckley, really popular actor in this country. People will forget that he was even in this. And so ridiculous. And to be fair to him, as his career goes on, I think it'll come to the point where the sad fact of reality, what used to have a lot of credibility about it, he'll be leaving it off his CV, and that's a great, great pity.
Well, and, you know, it's one of those things to where, again, you can't put the blame on any one thing with this. This is just one of these things, and I'm willing to give it through this season because, you know what? Like I said, I kind of went into this episode knowing who was writing it a little skeptical anyway, and it proved out. But I want to see what you're going to do. We know Cybermen are coming. We know we're probably going to see the Master again before this season is.
I'd say so. Yeah.
This is over. Let's see what happens with these. Obviously, we got another classic Doctor Who alien coming back next week, which I'm very excited for. So let's see what happens with that. And like I said, I do see some things of hope. I do think Jodie's performance as the Doctor, not leaps and bounds improving, but there are signs here and there that she's starting to put some pieces together now that she wasn't in the past.
I'm not seeing it. I'm not feeling it. But I'm prepared. You know, I'm prepared. I'm still prepared to be won over because I'm going to be here for the next 7 weeks. I'm going to be watching it. So, you know, like I say, when she starts to surprise me, then I'll mention her again.
Oh, that's the big thing. So,
but as regards to these messages, I mean, I just want to. I don't know if you feel. Here's how I feel about all the messages that we keep getting, because this won't be the last message that we're.
We're going to have another very heavy political episode, I'm sure, before the season is out.
And there are people out there who receive this in the way that to reject and dislike this episode of television in some way means that we reject the message. And that is simply not true.
We reject that the message is being force-fed to us. That's the issue. Doctor Who has always done it very well, overtly. You know, it's there. It's an underlying thing, not with a sledgehammer. And that's what we're getting right now. It's the message is delivered with a sledgehammer.
There's a difference between being topical and being political. That's what Doctor Who was topical before, and it would play with all sides of an argument. You know, and this is a general observation now, whereas now it has gone 100% political, and this is what we believe. You get on board with what we believe, or you are a bad, bad person. This isn't how Stephen Moffat run the show. It's not what he believes. He said very recently on one of the extras on the Blu-ray collection that he believes that this show should not align with any side of the aisle. but Chris Chibnall obviously disagrees. And so, you know, when you couple that with the draining of entertainment value and this sort of lack of dramatic credibility, a feeling of, considering that they're spending longer than ever making this show, more months, we get fewer episodes, they spend longer making them. The actors that they're bringing into them are just as high profile, and yet it's not working. Actors don't seem to be connecting with the material, and if they don't believe it, how are we supposed to?
I think you hit it right on the head.
Well, now we've torn that to shreds. We're going to take a quick break for a friend of ours to tell you all about all the other conversations taking place right across the Fandom Podcast Network on so many great other shows. Check out this little lot, then you can meet Kyle and I back here for a couple more minutes of talk about Doctor Who.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our Fandom Flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Something for everybody and some seriously great listeners there. There'll be some more Fandom Podcast Network co-hosts coming in at various points on this show in the near future. And as Carl said earlier on, there's merch to match, all of that over at the tpublic.com store. You can search the Fandom Podcast Network storefront for all those t-shirts, mugs, hats. Add to cart and support the Fandom Podcast Network into the bargain so everybody wins.
I just want to add into there one particular person who I know will probably be making an appearance here sooner than later. The Doctor will never, ever have a mullet. I'm just telling it right now.
Adam O'Brien, that sounds like a challenge, I think. Adam will undoubtedly be back soon. Adam's been having fun in our Facebook group, as he always does when he's not producing and hosting Lethal Mullet, along with 1,000+ other Doctor Who fans. And so we've been polling them and taking their comments over the last however many days since Orphan 55 was first broadcast. And so we're going to go through a few of those comments with you now. First, we've got Paul Thompson. He posted this, that it was entertaining enough to keep me interested. The dome looked like it was borrowed from the Truman Show. Not perfect, but it's still streets ahead of the previous season. So that's quite upbeat from Paul. Another Paul Cross, simply said, "I love it," with 3 exclamation marks. So there's no doubt in his mind. Mark Wayne Barrett, hello Mark. "I saw all its merits. I even liked its daft, quirky inconsistencies. And the whole point of it warning us not to take our future for granted and make selfish choices gave it a sufficient relevance to make me continue to be proud of the show." So, you know, he's taken what we have and he's come out of it with a bit more upbeat. But at the same time, Mary Samuel's been in touch and just asked, why can't they just write a good story without the in-your-face message at the end? Chibnall wants to completely change Doctor Who and not for the better. I dread watching it now, wondering what fresh disaster awaits. That's big talk from Mary. Gary Ackers asks, how and why in the world would there be a prize cube inside the TARDIS that transports you to a potential future timeline? Reasonable question. He also asks, How does the Doctor know this is just a potential timeline, and so not to even bother to take the TARDIS to rescue the two women, as opposed to just leaving them to their fates at the end, this not being an actual timeline? Dave Fielding. Hello, Dave. He's been in touch. Friend of the Fandom Podcast Network. I know, Dave. Just awful, says Dave. And you know how much I try to be positive about this Doctor. He's a big Jodie fan, is Dave. I was in the good camp for the last two episodes, and my heart sank as soon as I realised this was the Earth. I like Jodie, but the material she has to work with is at times simply awful. And finally, John Mosby, friend of Type 40, fresh out of his echo chamber, that fantastic website. John Mosby's been in touch, and he says, I'm a huge defender in the presumption that it's taking time for the everything new aspect of Doctor Who to deliver and settle, and that it's not all as bad as some people seem to want it to be. But Orphan 55 was really quite embarrassing, to the extent I can only presume there were wholesale production difficulties, and this is what they could salvage.
John's a great friend of the Fandom Podcast Network too, and I know he's been very defending of Doctor Who, but he's also called it when it's needed to be done. When he's calling it like this, you know that there's problems with this episode. And I'm one of these people. If you loved it, hey, great, all the more power to you. I love that you loved it. That's great. And all for you. These are our opinions. And you know, there's nobody who's right, there's nobody who's wrong, because you know what? It's what you pull out of it. And we all pull something different out of it. So that's the big thing. You know,
exactly.
One person could say they love it. For me, this was one of those episodes to where I love the ideas in it, but how they executed it and where they took it, just I was hoping for something different.
Well,
that's
yeah.
The bottom line for me.
That's one side to it, but on the other side, we also poll the members of the Type 40 Facebook group for their thoughts. This is people who may be lurking in the group and maybe don't want to speak quite so readily or drop a comment. So the results of the poll come out a little differently. We have right at the top, with 31.9% of our members consider it excellent, and 23.4% found it average, 17.2% said it was poor, with 8.5% voting it 1 out of 5. That's the exterminate option, with the remaining 6.3% saying that it was good. So the excellence come out right on top with that, where 10.6% of our members said that because of previous episodes, they're out, they're done, they're not watching anymore. So yeah, excellent comes out on top. So you know, we get a lot of negative comments, but the votes are all going excellent. I don't know if one is a reaction to the other. I'm not entirely sure whether it's a vote of confidence in the series or this particular episode. That did really, really surprise me. I don't know what, with the best will in the world, all those people, that majority, say that this is the very best that Doctor Who can be. I'd love to know. Please get in touch. If you agree that that's excellent, get in touch and let us know. You know, we'll read out some of your comments either here or on the videos. What have I been missing? What do you think, Kyle?
I'm going to say right now, put me into the average category on this episode. Because I don't think there was, like I said, there were some really interesting aspects to this episode. Just don't let Ed Prime touch any more scripts. That's all I'm asking. but let him give you the idea and let somebody else write where the idea goes.
So you're an average. I'm going to have to go with poor. Yeah, it gets the 2 out of 5 from me. The second week on the trot, it's a 2 out of 5. I don't like saying that. And, you know, as I keep saying to people, it can only, surely, from this point on, it can only get better, with 7 more of these to come. Maybe we'll see something affecting and era-defining in the episodes to come. And we're going to take a look at the ratings now. Doctor Who fans, as I'm sure you know, are more obsessed with ratings than those of any other fandom. And here with the very latest from both sides of the Atlantic is our friend Simon Horton with all that information for you. And we're not done with Orphan 55 just yet. I am here with Airtime Lord and general TV industry insider, your friend of mine, Simon Horton's back. Hello, mate. What have you got for me?
Hello there, Dan. It's nice to be back with you.
Yeah, the ratings. You're the ratings guy. You're up. You stay up all night just watching for these overnights.
Well, I do like to have my pulse on the ratings. As you say, having worked in TV for many years, ratings, I know, are very, very important. And it's one of those things that you can't really... You can't take for granted the ratings. They are very, very important to the industry as a whole. They look at them very, very carefully, and big decisions are made on ratings. So despite what anybody might think, they really are important. So I've got a couple of sets of figures for you. I've got the overnight ratings for Orphan 55 for both the UK and the US. The UK ratings, the overnights were 4.19 million, which is a drop, unfortunately, yet again. We started with Spyfall Part 1 at 4.88 overnight, which was already a low figure in comparison with the overnights.
We were all shocked by that one because of the New Year's Day slot.
Well, yeah. Were we shocked? I'm not sure that's open to debate. Okay, but whatever. They were 4.88. See, episode 2 of Spyfall fell only slightly to 4.6, so it's only a small drop. And we are only looking at overnights at the moment because we don't have the consolidated for Orphan 55 yet. So the overnight ratings for Orphan 55 are 4.19. So it hasn't dropped enormously, in all fairness. It's only gone from 4.88 with episode 1 of Spyfall to 4.19 of Orphan 55. That's not an enormous drop. That's not disastrous. The consolidated ratings, unfortunately, are not brilliant either for Spyfall. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the consolidated ratings for Orphan 55. But the fact remains, at the moment, it's still a downward trend. There's no two ways about it. And what's interesting, I think, Dan, with the UK ratings is that we were trying to be convinced into believing that the good word of mouth for episode 1 of Spyfall would have reaped rewards for episode 2 of Spyfall and then onwards through into the season. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened. It's not inconceivable that ratings would go up in the middle of a season.
No, ideally, they should.
But unfortunately, there's no reason why they shouldn't. People
forget they do with programs. They do with programs that catch the public's imagination. Bodyguard, State of Play, is it? Line of Duty, Line of Duty's 5 seasons in. So, yeah, things do, they do trend up, don't they?
Absolutely. There's no reason whatsoever why the ratings wouldn't go up halfway through a season as word of mouth does begin to spread. But unfortunately, that's not happening. It is just a steady downward trend at the moment. And at the moment, there's probably no indication that it's likely to change simply because, unfortunately, Orphan 55 seems to be losing supporters like there's no tomorrow in that some of the media and the critics, the professional critics who were defending Doctor Who, seem to be deserting it now. Orphan 55 seems to have been something of a watershed moment with regards to the actual critical reception that the programme is getting. So, but who knows? We'll see how that translates into
I saw one guy, he's a writer for The Guardian, and he put out there, even I think that Doctor Who is too preachy and liberal, and I write for The Guardian. That's a proper blue check-marked professional journalist sending it out publicly under his own name. You could say it's a cheap gag, but it's his career and he's quite happy putting it out there.
And the thing that I think is interesting is for a while as we all do, we always keep an eye on the media, see what the critics are saying. And for a long time, the media has been very favourable.
Very much so.
In the face of a lot of fans moaning. And I've often thought, gosh, you know, why is this? Why is there such a disparity between what fans think and what the media think? Well, it almost seems like the media is now kind of either catching up or beginning to get fed up with defending a show that they weren't that keen on, but they were prepared to toe a party line with, and now they're sort of maybe deserting it. I don't know. I don't want to read too much into it. It's early days, obviously. This is the first episode, really, that the media, if anything, have got their teeth into with Jodie Whittaker, or rather their claws into. So, who knows? Difficult to say. But moving on, staying with Orphan 55, but moving over the pond for us, at least.
Yeah. I find these fascinating, because it's such a different...
The trend is somewhat... Well, the trend is somewhat more worrying there because, as I've mentioned previously, the only figures that actually are taken any notice of really in the States are the overnight figures, because that's what the advertisers look at. So we started with episode 1 of Spyfall low at 0.79. Episode 2 went down to 0.59. Let me pull this up. Orphan 53 has gone down by nearly 21% to 0.47.
Okay.
So that's a significant drop, almost a quarter. Well, it's 20%. It's a good.
It's proportionately greater than the UK drop now of this time, isn't it?
It's a substantial drop. Between episode 2 and 3, it's gone down from point 56 to 0.46. That's to say, that's a significant drop for them. They hadn't got a lot to lose to begin with. So they've gone down quite noticeably. Now, just doing a quick little bit of calculation, Peter Capaldi's worst episode, for example, to put that into context, the worst viewing figures for Peter Capaldi was 0.473. So Jodie Whittaker has already beaten Peter Capaldi's lowest figure ever. We've gone below that. But it gets worse because the average for Peter Capaldi's last season in the US was 0.70. Mm-hmm. That was the average. Jodie's average so far for this season is 0.61. So already her average for this season is lower than Peter Capaldi's last season. Now, the reason that's worrying is because, of course, we're only 3 episodes in. There's another 7 episodes to go in this season. And at the moment, that average is only going to go down because the viewing figures are already going down. So the average will go down. So, unfortunately, 13 is really not...
I'm looking for some. Well, we've just been speaking to Kyle Wagner, you know, and Kyle, he's always said, you know, since this whole era kicked off, how he believes that it's been generally better received in America than it has in Great Britain. And I think that could be generally true, reflective of the audience that it has there, because it's, even though it was approaching quite a big cultural mainstream thing when Matt Smith was playing it, it's definitely not the case now. It's almost drifting back into culty geeks only territory, but they're not watching either. So
I would say you're right. I would say it's right back in cult era now. It's left the David Tennant Matt Smith years behind when it was absolutely getting a mainstream foothold, and it's gone straight back into geekdom now. And it is odd because I know, we've talked about this before, Dan, where it seemed to be that the US had embraced Jodie Whittaker more warmly than the UK had. And possibly, I remember arguing at one point, maybe that was because the US hasn't been with Doctor Who as long as the UK has. So it's got simply less of a legacy to live up to in the US. People are more prepared to accept change in the US than maybe they are in the UK.
That's true. And that's nothing against American fans or the American market.
No. It's simply that it's a different... They consume it in a different way. They're more flexible in their approach than the UK audience, simply because they're more welcome to change because they haven't had that sort of legacy since 1963, where the Doctor has always been a male. So they appeared to embrace Jodie much more than we did.
There's no right or wrong. There's no right or wrong to it. It's just how...
No right or wrong at all. That's just a statement of fact. And obviously that's a very, very sweeping statement on my part. And there's nuances within that. But that seemed to be the general trend. But as I say, now it's difficult to say, but however you dress it up, it's quite a substantial downward trend from episode 1, which was 0.7, down to 0.46. That's a big drop.
Yeah, combine that with the slow and the steady fall in the UK, you know, you can see why questions are being asked. And, you know, obviously some people are being, you know, quite defensive. After all, this is Doctor Who fandom we're talking about. But again, we all want the best of the show. We want this to turn around somehow. While we've got you, Simon, you know, what did you think of Orphan 55? Did you watch it? What do you think?
I watched it. I'm still sticking with the show for the moment. I'm honestly not certain how much longer I'll stay with it. I'm sure nobody is remotely interested in my shredding of Orphan 55. So briefly, I just thought it was terrible. I thought it reached a new low for Jodie Whittaker's era. It's still different to season 11 in that it's at least got more traditional Doctor Who stories. But I just thought it was a complete mess. It was too breakneck again. I hadn't got a clue what was going on. I've got serious questions as to why the Doctor abandons those last two characters at the end of the episode, when only last week we saw her going back in the TARDIS to change something to sort out the whole mess of things. So why couldn't she pop back in the TARDIS this week to save a couple of key players? as has been noted elsewhere, that the episode did feel like a greatest hits of Doctor Who. Yeah. We had bits of the Leisure Hive in there, the Waters of Mars, Full Circle, Midnight, Smile, the Mysterious Planet. The list goes on of how many things, how many.
It was moment for moment, wasn't it?
Literally, there was. It felt like there was barely one original idea in there. The thing that struck me, and this is my sort of final word on it, since I'm sure people don't want to hear me moaning about Orphan 55, but my final word on it would be: it was a complete rip-off of Aliens, the James Cameron film. It just had just about everything that Aliens had in there. It had a terraforming planet. It had a kid who knows more than the adults. It had a traitor in the midst of the crew. It had a ride out in an APC, an armored personnel carrier that looked identical to the one in Aliens. Literally everything about it was Aliens. But then on top of that, we throw in this weird character that's straight out of Spaceballs, the Mel Brooks movie, yeah, that looked like she'd been to the face painting tent and was wearing a fluffy balaclava hat. What was going on? I'm sorry, it was a mess.
Nobody really knows. We may never know. There was a lot going on in there, and there was a lot of steals. Everyone loves a Troyer. I'm not quite sure how long Chris Chibnall wants to push that, but same theory, he could be right.
But the other thing to note, of course, that really, really, and I said that Aliens was my final word, this is my final word. Yet again, for the second week running, we've got a mother who is an awful mother who didn't pay any attention to the child, that is the one that actually brought about the whole problem in the first place. Because that was the whole point of Burton's character, Lenny Henry's character in Spyfall. And it's the exact reason, raison d'etre, of the character in Orphan 55. It's already beginning to look like it's run out of ideas 3 episodes in.
And she was, of course, a horrible capitalist as well, and all the other, the Russians and all that sort of stuff.
I look forward to episode 4. Listen, if they mess up Nikola Tesla, I will not be happy, because he's one of my favourite characters from history. And he's got Robert Glenister as well, who is one of my favourite actors and, of course, was brilliant in The Caves of Androzani. So if they mess up episode 4, trust me, that will be the point that I give up.
He will be livid. And he's going to be livid. Come back next time, type 40. We'll see if we can get Simon. We'll see if we can get him down off the ceiling to come and talk about that episode with you. But for the moment, Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Cheers.
Thank you, Dan. Enjoy the rest of your day.
And thanks again to Simon, as ever, for pulling all of that together for us. Expect regular updates from Simon if he's here in person, or just sort of messaging in and a little insight like that over the rest of series 12.
Okay, so Simon does a great job with that, but I gotta stand on the rating soapbox here for 1 minute, Dan, so bear with me here.
Yeah, well, this is your final thought. I was going to ask you about
this. This is kind of my final thought. We have to look at ratings in a totally different way than what we used to, even just a few years ago. Between streaming services, on-demand, DVR. I mean, I bought the season pass on iTunes. That's how I'm watching them, because one, it comes out Sunday nights. I might have some other things going on a Sunday night. Maybe I'll watch it Monday when I get home from work or whatever. You have people who are not necessarily watching that live feed anymore, per se, especially with the Sunday nights. A lot of people just don't like that. And because they're planning for work the next, going back to work if they have weekends off, especially here in the States. They should have moved it back to Saturdays and kept it there. I just don't think you can read as much into the ratings as a whole. There's too many different components now. There's the streaming component. There's the DVR component. There's the, I'm going to watch it on demand component. So just because you see a drop in the ratings numbers, I think you have to find a way to get those other numbers and add that back in and bump it up. Do I think Doctor Who is probably pulling less ratings than it did a few years ago? Yes. Got a drastic drop. But I think when it's all said and done, the viewership is probably still on par with probably, I would say, within the last 3 to 4 years of Doctor Who. And I think we have to, when you add in all the different elements, and I think we have to remember that when we're talking about the ratings on not just Doctor Who, but anything these days in society, as far as entertainment goes.
I do see a point. But the way I view it, you know, over here we have the overnight ratings and we have the consolidated ratings. But as Simon's pointed out, there's no such thing as a consolidated rating in America. It's just not viewed as important, because most of the revenue, you know, whether, I suppose, if it's a home produced show, making the show, and when it's an import or a co-production like this, you know, towards funding it, financing it or whatever, most of the money still comes from advertising. And advertising, I know that they do advertise on streaming services, not to the same level, and they don't make the revenue's just not as high at the moment. And so whilst that still is at play, just like the TV license, then the ratings are always going to be talked about in the same way. You know, you are right, and times are changing. I'm not sure what it's like in America.
Let me, as far as Doctor Who goes in America, because there's a big thing happening with Doctor Who in America as far as
the profile of it.
Not even the profile of it, but how we're going to be able to get it. It's off Amazon right now, and you cannot stream Doctor Who anywhere unless you've got BritBox.
Until HBO Max launches.
Right. HBO paid a crap ton of money to the BBC to make HBO Max, which launches this spring, the only place you can stream Doctor Who in the United States. And that's...
I was surprised when I found out there was this 3 months gap between Amazon losing it and HBO Max picking it.
HBO Max starts sometime like late March, early April. So it's a 3-4 month gap. So right now, the only other way you can get it is through, if you buy it through iTunes, because iTunes is still selling it, or if, like, on demand through your cable. But that's only more recent episodes. Otherwise, you're stuck with syndication. And that's a huge deal, to where in the States, you better be ponying up for HBO Max, or you're not going to get much in the way of old Doctor Who episodes, because that's the only place you're going to find them. And it's like, except for BBC America on it, if they air them on BBC America, but you're not going to find them streaming on BBC America where you can go access the whole library. So it's a major change with Doctor Who and how we're going to be able to consume it here in the US.
Do you think that when you were talking earlier on about that marathon that they had on over Christmas and New Year, will BBC America still be allowed to do that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. BBC America still has broadcasting rights, but as far as watching it streaming, you know, where you just have it accessible at your fingertips, unless you own it, you bought it on DVD or own it like on an iTunes or something like that, you're out of luck. You better sign up for HBO Max, because that's the only place you're going to find Doctor Who.
Because we do get asked about this, you know, even a podcast and a fan entity that Type 40 is on Facebook. We get asked, why has Doctor Who disappeared from here and there? How can I watch it? How can I stream it? Where can I find... This is classic or new Doctor Who, you know, because BritBox has only just relatively recently launched in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been reasonably successful. But, you know, we get asked... This information isn't getting to people. And the frustration of when such a big show blips off the platform that, you know, particularly if you're still paying it, if you're locked down into paying for Amazon for the next 3 or 4 months, I'm not quite sure how it works. So I think you can probably just drop that.
It's either like a monthly or a yearly sign up. It's not, there's no like, oh, I can pay for three more months. But Amazon's got so many great other original programmings, including their upcoming Lord of the Rings series, The Expanse, which is one of the best science fiction shows on television right now. A lot of things. So you're that's neither here nor there, but, you know, that's a big deal when you have such an iconic show go to where this is the only place you can find it.
Hey, at least there is lots of other good shows around at the moment.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I think that's the thing for any of these. There's so much more out there to compete with Doctor Who and all these, because you have all these services who are looking to find something like this. I mean, Netflix has basically said we're going more fandom shows because that's what gives us our higher ratings. And
is that right?
Yeah. So that's one of the big things that is going on right now. Is right now the nerd culture rules, and maybe we're coming closer to the end of that cycle than not, but I don't see it changing anytime drastically in the next few years. So
doesn't seem that way to me.
So there's so much competition, and it's instant gratification, and, you know, It's going to be interesting to see, to me, because I think Disney Plus is changing the dynamic a little bit by bringing all their shows to a weekly thing instead of the Netflix model, just bam, drop the whole thing right there. So I'm going to be curious to see how things adapt with that. And I think Doctor Who's a big part of that, because most Doctor Who fans are used to having a big gap between seasons, at least an 8 month to a year gap.
It's getting that way.
About the only thing that had longer gaps was Game of Thrones seasons, but come on.
It is. I think that's a great pity. Particularly, keep talking about the kids with streaming and with binge watching and all these things. I don't think Doctor Who should ever drop an entire season at once. The BBC has gone from kind of leading the market with this when they developed the iPlayer and all that technology to now following on behind American platforms.
Yeah, well, I think the other issue truly is, too, Dan, and I truly believe this, is we are in the era where there's no such thing as appointment television anymore. I think the last thing of appointment television was Game of Thrones, and I think we are now past that point where, oh my God, it's Sunday night, I have to watch this now, because otherwise it's going to be everybody's going to be talking about it within half an hour after it ends. And we don't have, I think that day is done now.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think Doctor Who fans and supporters should be quite proud of the fact that until very recently, I'd say Doctor Who was one of the last ones standing in that was still appointment to view, and that it lost that badge. I think it would have lost it anyway. I don't think that is a reflection on.
I honestly believe that Doctor Who started losing its appointment television towards the end of the Matt because people were kind of getting a little burned out on Moffat. I think people still watched it. They were still excited for it, but it lost that appointment television feel. I think the span of probably about the middle of the Tennant run through about the middle of the Matt Smith run, Doctor Who became appointment television.
I think it held on for that. It's probably true in America. I don't know. I'll take your word for it. I think it held on for a little longer here. I think it was around Heaven Sent and Hellbent that it lessened here. That last Capaldi run didn't have, you know, it did. I mean, it was still appointment to view for me. But yeah, I was aware that it was changing and it was sort of slipping away. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. Yeah, and that about covers it for this time, I think. Kyle, we don't know where this is going to be over the next few weeks. Are you brave enough to come back and talk about some more Doctor
absolutely.
Who?
Absolutely. You know, I love coming back and talking Who. And, you know, I think it's going. I think the good thing about all of this is whether you like it or you don't like it, it's inspiring conversation. And I think it's getting ideas out there. Maybe not. And some of the people aren't doing it the best way possible, but it's getting ideas out there and it's getting people talking, and that's always a good thing. I you know, just remember, be constructive about it, be respectful to each other. We say it all the time at the end of our show, Culture Clash, you know, respect each other and enjoy your fandom. And it's so true.
Yeah, we can have therapy through conversation, can't we? And that's what we like to do on here, just good talk about something that, you know, at its core, that we all do still love. We're here for the duration. We're keeping up the pace, and I'll be back with more Type 40 very, very soon. So look out for that wherever you've found this. It could have been on Apple Podcasts. If you search for the Fandom Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, you'll find us there. If you've got a minute, drop us a review just so the new listeners can find us a little bit easier, and it helps a lot more than you'd think. We're also over on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play, the Podbean app, and Spotify, which is my weapon of choice. That's my sonic screwdriver, just simply because it's so easy to use, even for me, and we're so easy to find. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network and you'll see all the listings drop down. Anything you want to say to us, add your reviews of our reviews even, you can come and say hello and contact us directly. Email at type40doctorwho@gmail.com, Twitter and Instagram at type40doctorwho, a Facebook page and that Type 40 Facebook group for real-time talk, not just with us, but our fellow companions too. You can vote in those polls and have your say about the episodes. The more the merrier. Kyle, where can people find you again?
Well, you can find me anywhere here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm all over the place. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW, Instagram at AKyleFandom. You know, all I do is podcasts. That's all I do anymore. It's editing. It's podcasting. I don't sleep. It's bad. I need a vortex manipulator. Santa didn't help me out this Christmas.
Go and have a lie down there. Just like Orphan 55, Kyle's all over the place. But you can join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Type 40 at Doctor Who Podcast, where we always have the time if you have the space.